Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. You can find them on the internet at commonwealthclub.org or download our iPhone and Android app for the program and schedule information and podcasts of past programs. I'm Doug Conklin, head of design for Dockers at Levi Strauss & Company, the underwriter of tonight's program. We've been in the apparel business for more than 140 years, so we've seen fashion trends come and go, and we've played a big part in creating those trends. In the 90s, Dockers helped lead the casualization of the office place, and today we continue to define classic menswear through innovative and refined looks for men of all ages in and out of the office. That's why I'm thrilled to be here tonight as your chair for what I'm sure will be an informative and engaging conversation around fashion today. So let's get to it. If you've seen The Devil Wears Prada or Project Runway, you'll know that a lot of people are obsessed with fashion. You'll also know that today's trend may easily become tomorrow's throwaway. Tonight, we're going inside the world of fashion to find out what's in and what's out, and get advice on how to best determine your signature style. Our noted speaker, Joe Z, is one of the fashion industry's keenest observers and influencers. As editor-in-chief and executive creative officer for Yahoo Style, he leads the vision and development of Yahoo's new digital magazine, in addition to helping create other content related to fashion and beauty. Prior to this role, Joe spent 7 years as creative director of Elle Magazine, where he developed a new visual signature for the publication and oversaw all the photo shoots and covers, as well as penning a monthly column. Joe previously held fashion editorial positions at W, Details, Vanity Fair, and House and Garden. He has also served as executive producer and host of Sundance TV's investigative series, Revealing, and the original fashion series, All on the Line with Joe Z, where he has helped to jumpstart young designers' careers. The New York Times has called him a chatty and approachable ambassador of fashion. Joe will be chatting tonight with Carolyn Zinko, style writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Carolyn joined the San Francisco Chronicle in 1993. She contributes to the Chronicle's style blog, SF Unzipped. Carolyn says when she spends most weekends in the backyard gardening, and when she's not traipsing off to black tie parties in full-length gowns. Please welcome Joe Z in conversation with Caroline Zinko.
Wow. Well, I knew you were an important guy, but I can't believe that with all those things you've done, you have time to be here today. So thanks for squeezing us in.
Yeah, no.
So we're here before a live audience, which is a little unusual for me because usually I'm at my desk at the Chronicle with a headset on, typing at my keyboard while I talk to people and interview them on the phone. But the interviewing process is the same, so I thought we would just conduct this as if I were chatting with you on the phone at my desk.
I love that. Let's do it.
In a sense. So first of all, let's get at what I like to call some nuts and bolts questions.
Okay.
Little details that help people get acquainted with you, and then we can go on to the juicy stuff. Where were you born?
I was actually born in Hong Kong, but I moved to Toronto with my family when I was one. So I really grew up in Toronto, and then I got to New York City in 1990. So I've pretty much been here traipsing around ever since.
Were your parents in the fashion industry, or did you get any sort of influences from them in terms of your career? Or
no, I don't think they could be more removed from the fashion industry. I don't even think, like, for the longest time, no. I mean, my brother and sister, who are younger than me, still live within 5 miles of our high school. Everybody still lives, you know, pretty much where we grew up. And no, I think for the longest time, even as a stylist, I think there was a while when I was just starting to work in the industry, and I was a stylist. And I think my mother thought I did hair. So, like, I don't think for the longest time anyone even had any concept of what I did. And it was too hard to explain because, but it was, you know, it was so different. I mean, today you can, you have Devil Wears Prada, and we laugh, but you have Devil Wears Prada, you have the Rachel Zoe Project, you talk about stylists on a red carpet all the time. But back then, the idea of a stylist was sort of this nebulous thing, and I think people didn't really understand. I mean, I remember even speaking to friends back then, back in Toronto, they would say, I don't understand, you took the picture? I'm like, no, wait. So you organized the picture? I'm like, no, I styled her. Like, it was a very complicated, or just something they didn't think was a real job.
Did you spend a lot, Toronto is cold parts of the year, right? I grew up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, very.
And I know about snow.
Yeah.
You're housebound some of the year.
It's not that bad.
Cold outside.
It's not that bad. We went to school.
Did you spend a lot of time reading fashion magazines or watching TV shows that influenced
With television. I mean, I think I still am. I mean, I'm obsessed with pop culture, so that's sort of my thing. So I've always been obsessed with television. I remember growing up, and I used to drag the television. I used to run home. You know, the bell would go off at 3 o'clock, but I would like have my coat on the back of my chair and run home so I can get home in time to watch General Hospital. And literally, it would be television all the way. I used to tell time. We had no clocks in our house. I don't know why, but I used to tell time with television. I would be like, oh, Happy Days is on. It's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. So like things, I was like, oh, the news is on. It's 11 p.m. now. Like that kind of thing where that's sort of how I grew up. And I remember like, I'm so dating myself, this is so bad. But I used to be so obsessed with television shows, I used to record the dialogue on a tape cassette, and I could listen to it over and over again. I mean, this is pre-VCRs, so I was like so obsessed with that. But yeah, I was totally obsessed with reading fashion magazines. I used to have them stacked next to my locker at school in Toronto, and I would, in between periods, lunchtime, cut class, and I would just devour fashion magazines. You know, I was obsessed with it. I would read every single thing and really just be so precious with it all. Like every single ad, every piece of, like every written word, you know, every masthead. I remember even looking at fashion stores and being able to like test myself on like, well, who took that picture? Who designed that dress? Who's modeling here? And I don't know why I got so obsessed with that thing, but it just became.
Sometimes boys like to watch baseball and then they have their trading cards. And they do the same thing. They obsess over details.
So that was your passion. Yeah, I mean, I liked the whole package. Like, I liked how the whole thing was put together. And I think that's sort of what really drew me to want to move to New York and work in magazines. I mean, I never had a plan B, C, or D. I was just like, plan A, I'm going to go to New York, I'm going to work in magazines. That was it. I had no idea what I would have done if that didn't work. Is it working?
Luckily,
I hope it's working.
Yeah, luckily it did. Now, thanks to the internet, I learned that you had a transformative moment watching the Oscars in your family living room in 1978.
I did? And what exactly happened?
It had something to do with Farrah Fawcett.
Oh, my God. What was that? I had a lot of transformative moments watching television in my
family. Okay, well, don't talk about that one. Talk about another one.
Oh, the royal wedding.
Okay.
The first one.
So
it was Princess Diana. Prince Charles, and because of the time difference, I remember watching, and this is like, again, pre-VCRs, 1981, I remember, or 1980, I think I woke up at like 3 a.m. or whatever it was, and I dragged a sleeping bed into the living room. I was like all ready, and I was like all going at it. I was like so excited, like, you know, and it was just like so glamorous. It was just everything. It was like royalty and wedding, and like it was just so beautiful, and like it didn't even mean. And fairy tale, and I was like a 10-year-old kid, I don't know. And I was just like sitting there in my living room, like watching this, going like, oh my God. And then of course, when Kate and Will got married, I got up again at 3 a.m., but this time I had to get up to watch it so I could report on it, because I remember I was doing all of this like reporting on it for Elle, so I had to actually get up and watch it for work. But I loved it. It was kind of awesome.
It's not a bad gig, getting paid to watch things like that. I also was in the newsroom at 3 that morning.
Yes.
Watching and typing, but not talking to anyone.
It's bad at 2 a.m. when the alarm goes up, but it's not bad once you look back and say, oh, I got to do that.
So our friend at the podium recounted your long history at magazines before going to Yahoo. Tell us how you got from Toronto to New York in the first place.
Well, I went on a school trip. I was in a school symphony. So then we went on an exchange trip and I went to New York to play. And I fell in love with New York. I mean, I think I just wandered off from the crowd and I was like, oh my God, I'm supposed to live here. but I think I got to get home first. I can get back here. It was awesome. I just love the energy of the city. It was just so incredibly inspiring. I was like, it was that kind of thing, and I can't explain it, but it's the kind of thing where you just know when you got there, it was like, oh, this is supposed to be my home.
It struck a chord with you somehow.
Yeah, but it felt familiar. It felt like I'm supposed to be here. This is supposed to be my home. And like getting there. So I went to FIT. I saved up all my money. I moved down to New York. I worked at FIT. I went to FIT because I needed a degree, because being Canadian, I couldn't really work in the States. So I was like, I got to figure this out. So it was quite calculated in a way. So I had to go to school, get a degree. So during that time, I tried to intern and get experience. And interning was hard. I mean, I got there on like day two. The second day I was in New York City, I'm pounding on the internship door at FIT, and they're like, can I help you? And, you know, they were like, no, you know, internships are for 4 years. You've been here a day. I was like, oh, so you can't help me. I'm like, okay, no worries. So then I started like researching all the names, which I had read religiously in a mass hit anyways, and I called everybody, and I just wrote everybody letters, and I really followed up on that. And, you know, and I got an internship on my own, which was kind of great. And I was saying this earlier today. I was saying, you know, my first internship was at a trade magazine called Sportswear International. We were basically glorified messengers. We took a shopping cart and filled it with Garmin bags to return all the stuff from photo shoots. And a fellow intern and I would just push it up and down Garmin District while someone waited downstairs and someone went upstairs. It was like a homeless person with a shopping cart. And I was so excited. I was so excited. I was literally all the time going like, I got to meet, you know, somebody in a showroom. And that somebody was a receptionist. And I was like, I got to go to a showroom. And that showroom was not even important. But, like, it was just so exciting. Like, to me, that's what fashion was. I was like, I'm in it. I'm doing it. And I'm still pushing that cart up and down. But it was great.
Well, that's good. That's great. Now, how is working at Yahoo different from working at a magazine?
Well, I've had to learn to like purple.
That's you, for those who don't know, that's Yahoo's signature.
That's Yahoo's like team color. For all those who don't play on that team. You know what the biggest difference is? I've worked in nothing but the print medium forever. And I've worked at all the best companies that really knew how to do print so well. You know, Condé Nast and Hearst and really got what those products were about. But the media landscape has changed incredibly in the last 6-7 years. And the idea that like things are so much more reactive, things are so much faster, things are so much more real time, that you know, you don't have the luxury of just contemplating what you want to do. Because by the time you're thinking about it, somebody's already done it 10 times and better and faster and more complete, and you're just trying to stay in the game. And I think, you know, when I started in the early 90s, we would go to the fashion shows. No, there are no celebrities. There is no Kris Jenner. There is no cameras. It's not that kind of a thing. And we would all come back and say, it was all about miniskirts. That's fine. Nobody in the real world even knew that. And we say, oh, it's only February. We're going to make sure we put it in the September issue. And everybody would be fine with that. Today, it's like it's happening in real time. And like, even I remember I was one of the first ones to join Twitter and all these things. And when I used to post pictures and no one else was posting pictures. And now everybody's just posting anything blurry from the front row, the fifth row, the 10th row, the, you know, outside and everything. And it just starts to become a thing where like, it's such a fight to be there. It's such a fight to prove that you're there, so that it stops becoming about reporting and stops becoming about like just documenting. And that's totally fine, but that means everything is happening in faster than real time in a way. So I think that's my biggest thing by going to Yahoo. It's like I now get to actually have a giant audience and a conversation with them all the time in real time. And that's the most exciting part, because I think so fast. Like I live my life in bite-sized information. You know, I get news headlines at 140 characters. I get my friend's day recap for me in a picture on Instagram. Like, all of those things happen. So, like, I don't have to call my friend for 3 months because I've known totally what she does every single day. I don't have to turn on the TV to know what's happening in Japan, Brazil, or, you know, Texas, because I've seen it on Twitter. Like, all of those things can really provide me that chance to have a real-time conversation. So what I do is just take all those things and spin it into my crazy conversation in my head, and now put it out there for 800 million people every month.
But you still do fashion shoots.
All the time, yeah.
So there is some, aside from the speed difference, and the bite-sized nuggets, you still do substantive things with photo shoots.
Oh, yeah.
As if you were doing a cover of a magazine.
And we are still doing an original cover for Yahoo Style. Like, I think that was the beauty of Yahoo Style, and I think that's what's different with this site than anything to me really out there, is I've taken the best parts of a print magazine and merged it with those bite-sized fun nuggets that you can take away. So you have the chips you can snack on, but you got this glorious meal that you can have as well, and they can live side by side, and it feels really great. So yes, we are doing big photo shoots. We're doing cover shoots. So, you know, we have models all the time. We do trend photo shoots, but, you know, we're launching covers constantly. We launched with Jessica Biel, and then we just put up Emily Ratajkowski, who's in Gone Girl, which everybody has to go see, but she plays Ben's mistress. And, you know, we're just working on the next one already. Like, things are moving along, and I love how that we can take those glorious moments. Because I think when I got to Yahoo, and it was the kind of thing where, like, Marissa Meyer said so much about these things being digital magazines, and there was so much stuff in the press about saying, well, what exactly makes it a digital magazine? And, like, the whole thing is, like, I've worked in magazines for 20-plus years. I know what makes a digital magazine. A magazine isn't necessarily flipping through pages. The pages itself isn't what you're so excited about, because that's really just paper. You're excited about what's on those pages. You want
to? Careful, you're talking to a print journalist here.
No, but you know what? It's the words you put on that paper, and it's the pictures you put on that paper. So I'm just talking, I'm not talking about the actual paper itself, but you put words down there that people want to be swept away in. You put a story in a magazine that people really want to see and really be immersed in. That's really what it is. At the end of the day, that's the emotion. So when I read your column or I read your writing, I get swept away by that, because that's an emotional thing. So how do I replicate that emotion online? Because everything online becomes so disposable. So, like, how do I take those moments where it is just nuggets of information, and it's fun, and it's quick, and it's easy, and then at the same time have those glorious moments where you are just going through everything, and you're loving it, and it's working. I mean, we launched with Jessica Biel. I did an original photo shoot with her. I styled her. We shot her in the Hollywood Hills. We have it as a big full-screen cover module. And on launch, it was the biggest launch of all of the magazines at Yahoo. And alone on digital, on Jessica's piece with all the slideshows, we had maybe 28 million page views. I mean, that's like huge in one day.
Wow.
You know, so on one person. And, you know, I was emailing Jessica being like, I think a lot of people care about you. But I think that's sort of, to me, real testament to sort of really say that people care, that they're taking the time to be invested in, because you are only invested in it if you're emotionally connected to it. And I think that part has become really important.
One of the things that I'm curious about, when I look at a fashion magazine, the photo is, you know, this big, let's say, and we're flipping through the paper, which we don't necessarily need to anymore, but isn't the impact of something that you see in a magazine different than something you see small on your mobile device or on your computer screen at work?
Sure, but I think the impact is different for me, maybe, or for somebody of that particular generation who can have a point of comparison. And it's a different type of impact. But I think when you're a generation that hasn't grown up with that point of comparison, you don't really know. And you have to buy the magazine in order to even really be connected with it. This is just there. It's free. You know, I think, you know, it was sort of enlightening to me. Like, I shot a cover of Dakota Johnson for Elle magazine. She's going to be in 50 Shades of Grey. And I remember we did it. It was beautiful. No one knew who she really was. And we were sort of the first one to do it. We put it up on Elle.com. And it was up for a month. And, you know, it had great engagement. I mean, it had maybe like 18, 20 comments. And I remember looking at it on Yahoo, and it was up for 30 minutes and had 3,000 comments. So the level of engagement is already so fast. And the level of engagement is that people don't care where the picture came from. They just want to look at the picture. So it didn't matter for the originating source of the picture. They just care that they saw the picture. And I think that's sort of telling in a way that people don't feel that they have to get in their car, drive to a store, pay $5, get the magazine to feel like it's going to make a difference. They can get it anywhere they want. And I think that's sort of the world we live in. It's like you see Lady Gaga on TV and you're like, oh my God, I have to Google her. Oh my God, look, she came up. Look how great she looks, blah, blah, blah. And I think we all live in that moment, because I don't think anybody of any generation be like, look, Gaga's on TV. Wait, quick, get my shoes on. Quick, let's get in the car. Let's go find a magazine with her on it. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just not how we consume information anymore.
So I'm curious about what you feel defines a cover image. Like, how do you create, what do you think are the elements that are needed, whether it's in a print product or your cover image now for Yahoo?
Well, online. The cover image for Yahoo is very different because we serve a different need, because a cover on a magazine is a vehicle to purchase the magazine. So I always call the cover an ad. That's our ad. That's where we basically tell people, you have seconds to register, you have to stop, be engaged in that picture, it's got to draw you in, and then it's got to literally make you make that leap to take it to the cash register and pay $5. So all that has to happen in seconds. Online, it's a different thing. I'm just trying to get to draw you in, but I want you to draw you in to go further. So I want to draw you in to go through the slideshow. I want you to read the story, but I want you to read other stories. I want to bring you in and keep you there. So that's sort of a different type of standard. I don't know. You know, when I first started in this business, I had so many rules about what makes a good cover. It's like, oh, she should have big hair. She should wear red. She should look directly at the, she shouldn't turn her shoulder. She should have skin. She should have arms. Oh no, she should have some sleeves. It was literally like a recipe list of what you should make on a cover. But I think as I did it, as long as I have, and I've styled maybe hundreds of covers, it's, you have to sort of throw those things out the window. You know, all the things that they said you couldn't do, wear black. It was some of our most successful covers at Elle, or any of those things. I think the rules have long been thrown out the window because I think the consumer is so savvy to what we think we're supposed to do. It's like, she's going to have big hair, she's going to be blonde, she's going to wear red, you're going to see cleavage, and there's going to be a big number on the left-hand side that says 500 plus items to buy. And like, that worked probably at one point, and I'm not saying it doesn't, but at some point, people also understand that there's more to it than that.
How did you actually get this job at Yahoo? Did you go to them?
Oh my God. Okay, so it was kind of crazy. No, I'll tell a speed up version of this. But it was around the Grammys. I completely remember this. It was this year around the Grammys, end of January. We were in Los Angeles. We rented a house in Los Angeles the whole month of January because all the award shows was packed into that month, and I had to work all the carpets at the award show, so we just lived there, my boyfriend and I. And I remember
interviewing people on the red carpet.
Yes, I was interviewing people on the red carpet for Entertainment Tonight. So okay. I had to really be there, and I had a lot of rehearsals and prep work. And I remember, and we were out to dinner one night, and I had been approached for another job, completely different and separate from this. And I said, no, I'm not interested in that at all. It was like a really big, crazy job. And a friend of mine was like, why? I was like, I don't know. It's just not the thing I want to do. They're like, well, what was there anything about that job that excited you? And I said, you know what there was? It was the idea that I could just take something and turn it around. I said, you know what? Kind of like, I know this sounds really weird, but you know, I read this profile, Marissa Meyer, and like what she's doing with Yahoo and what she's just making really quick, you know, guttural, you know, decisions. I was like, I kind of like that. And like, just really just being focused and just doing her thing. And like to criticism or to, you know, good or bad criticism, she's making those decisions and she's doing it and it's working. And I was like, I love that. I kind of like that. But I was like, I don't know, or I don't know that to anybody in the tech world. I was like, okay, whatever. We had dinner. A couple days later, I'm not kidding, there was a phone call on my cell phone from someone at Yahoo. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was my friends punking me. I never called them back. I was like, who with a British accent is going to call me from Yahoo on my cell phone? How did they get that number? 2 days later, that's a joke. And then 4 days after that, they called again. I picked it up. I was like, hello? And it was like, for real. But it was, you know, they were calling me at Yahoo and they wanted to speak to me. And it was basically to talk to me about what Marissa had launched and would I be interested in launching the fashion version of a digital magazine? And I was like, never thought about it, but let's talk about it.
All right. Well, I was briefly thumbing through these and I saw something. Something about Alibaba.
Oh, gosh. I don't own any of its stock yet.
Okay, well, let's see.
Well, it got too expensive for me. I got priced down.
Well, let's take a stab at it, and we'll see how it goes.
I don't think I'm the one you need financial advice from, but let's try.
How do you see the Alibaba IPO and power of China affecting the creative aspect of fashion?
Oh, well, I mean, I think we live in a very global world. I mean, I knew that very quickly, even working at Elle, which was the largest global magazine that was out there. But I think on Yahoo's level, it's just like gargantuan and it's huge. And the fact that China is really a reigning force. I mean, the fact that we are a signed-on sponsor for the Costume Institute Met this year in conjunction with Vogue, and the theme is China. You know, for Anna Wintour to know that the theme is China, enough to be able to put it out there, of course, that's what the next reigning power is. And not just in business, absolutely in an economic and financial place, China is the next sort of PowerPoint, but also from a creative place. And I think that's the place that's sort of been overlooked. And I love so much the fact that Marissa and everybody at Yahoo understood that in joining forces with Vogue to do the Met, because understanding that that's what it is, because it is a global world that we live in, and that the world that we live in is so much smaller, that all these things that felt so far away really feel really close in the way that we do things. So, yeah, does Alibaba IPO help? Yeah, I think we got a few more bucks. But I think at the same time, I think what they have is really to show the world that the power of China and commerce and e-commerce and shopping and all that stuff is really in demand. And I think that's just going to help everybody be able to grow their businesses in a bigger way.
So you travel a lot for your job. Do you go to Europe more, or have you been to Asia recently?
I have not been to Asia recently, but I've been to Asia a ton. I travel so much. I think when I was a kid, my parents wanted to know what I wanted to be, and I said a flight attendant so I could travel all the time. My dream came true, except I don't serve you food. But I travel all the time. I mean, especially when I was at W, I used to go to photo shoots, and I would feel like I was on a rock tour. I remember one year I went from New York to Milan, Milan to Thailand, Thailand back to Paris for the shows, Paris to Sao Paulo, Brazil for a photo shoot, then to Stockholm. By then I was just over it. I was like, I need to go home. And then we went to St. Petersburg. It was just like I was literally ping-ponging around the world constantly, living out of a bag. And it was great. I'm so glad I did it in my 20s and early 30s. But then after a while, it's just really exhausting. Today, no, I travel all the time, but to be honest, really New York, LA. Like LA, you know, we have a place in LA now. Like I'm there all the time to a point where TSA knows me. Which is not even the check-in counter girls. They know me too, but the people at customs know me, which is like a lot. But Europe, you know, I just got back from London at Fashion Week, but you know, twice a year I'll try to go.
What is your favorite chain store in Hong Kong?
My favorite chain store? Lane Crawford. I love Lane Crawford. I mean,
what makes Lane Crawford your favorite?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been to Hong Kong in maybe 10 years or 8 years or so. I'm trying to think the last time I went.
What do you remember that they had there?
It was a department store. It was just really well curated. They had amazing home products mixed with probably the best brands in the world. You know, it's like a Neiman/Bergdorf type chain, but it was just a really well curated, well edited assortment of product.
So it's comfortable, and you feel like you're sort of exploring and finding new things. And
yeah, I mean, I love Hong Kong because it feels very Western at the same time. I mean, it's really just, I always try to explain to people, it's exactly like New York with 100 times more people. So it's the same size as New York. It's an island like New York, but 100 times more people. So you can only imagine. I mean, you can't even walk on the sidewalk. That's why they built bridges between the buildings so that you can go underground, above ground, or on the sidewalk because there are so many people all the time. It is Times Square everywhere. Kind of like that, though.
Recently on Yahoo Style, I saw a video of you with Carolina Herrera.
Yes.
And you had lunch in a restaurant, and you ate. They did not have fat-free vegan food. They had grilled cheese sandwiches, and she surprised you by digging into an enormous plate of French fries. She shrugged it off, saying, "If you're going to do it, you might as well do it good or do it big." Are videos like that something that you want to do more of, and you think that helps distinguish you from other fashion websites?
Oh, absolutely. I think when I got to Yahoo to launch this, I said I wanted it to be a mix of different things. So video was really important. Live programming was important. You know, short form, long form. Like, it was about a mix of, you know, because to me, it's like, imagine the site being like a great dinner party. It's always like a mix of people that makes it something great. And that's what this is, like someone who's going to have all these different things to say. And it's not just doing a video to do the sake of a video, because there's so many videos online. And what makes anybody want to watch one over another? I just wanted to do something that was fun. And when I got there, I was so inspired by the idea that people think fashion people are so uptight, and they are, and that they are so humorless, and they are, and they take themselves so seriously, and they do. But, you know, I remember being at dinner a few years ago with Michael Kors. We went to the Little Owl, which is a tiny little dive place in New York in the West Village, and him and I, we just sat there, and we ate fried chicken and sliders, because he's like, Joe, you have to try the sliders, and you have to try the fried chicken. And I was like, you don't have to tell me. And we ordered those things, and in the middle of eating all this fried chicken and sliders and meatballs and all this stuff, he's like telling me about like how he just went to a trunk show, and he's like, Joe, you know, nobody wears black outside of New York City. You know, they really only wear black if they go to a funeral. They freak out if you suggest a black sweater. And I was like, I was so mesmerized by that particular conversation I had with Michael while like we're like eating chicken with our hands and all this stuff. And I was like, that was what I wanted to do, and that's sort of what inspired the series. I was like, you know, to show a different side of all the fashion people that we all think we know. Like, you'd think Caroline Herrera is going to want to eat at a fancy uptown brasserie, and she will too, but I was like, let's do these things where I can take these designers to a taco truck, a ramen shop, a creperie, like a diner, we can eat grilled cheese and burgers and all of these things, and just show a different side of them. And that's really sort of what was the inspiration for this particular series. So we started with her. I went to an Irish pub with Betsy Johnson. I'm doing something with Michael coming up and Zach, and then we've got a bunch lined up too. But, you know, that would be my thing. Like, if I could go and, like, stand on the street with Karl Lagerfeld eating a crepe, that would be kind of awesome.
Do you think he would never do that? Would he do that?
Well, I'm never going to say never, but he's not doing it tomorrow, but I'm not going to say never.
Because you're persistent. That's how you got your foot in the door in the beginning.
Yeah, I do like to say, don't tell me no, yes.
Well, listen, you like to be in New York, and New York Fashion Week just happened. So off the top of your head, what three women's wear shows for spring 2015 did you like, and why did you like them?
Oh, wow.
If you like more, don't stop at three. But
what did I love? I sort of love all this sort of the next generation that's coming up. Like Alexander Wang was really great. It was sporty, it was sexy, it was fun, but he's so polished. I was at his very first show when it was in the basement of a nightclub. I mean, it was total fire hazard. The clothes were poorly made. It was just a clubby thing. It was like a 90s club thing. Aaron Wasson, the model, was a stylist. It was just like a bunch of kids having fun. And I was like, oh my God, these are good. He's like, this kid can amount to something. And then, like, he's a conglomerate. Like, he is, like, literally mogul now. Like, he's designing for Balenciaga. His accessories are just doing phenomenal business. Like, the whole company is just doing incredibly well. And I love how that next generation is there.
And he's from San Francisco.
Oh, is he? That I didn't even know. All right, hometown hero. And I just learned something. But, like, Joseph Altazar also shows on the same day. He's, like, the young generation, too. And he's amazing. And that collection was really just chic and elegant. And, like, I went to go see him in the showroom before the show, and, like, just looking at the amount of detail that he puts into every little thing. And they were really, really real wearable clothes that were incredibly well done, and a fortune. But then he just had a Target.
That just launched on the...
That just launched.
A week ago Sunday.
So you guys want something amazing, go to Target and see if you can score any of his stuff, because it's incredible. Because he worked so hard with them to maintain the quality he wants at the price level that they want. And I think they found that perfect balance. And Alex is doing H&M coming up. And of course, I love Marc Jacobs. I mean, it was like a crazy... Like, we sat in a pink house. We had to put on headphones. But yeah, it was kind of awesome.
Fashion is theater. Do you think there are a few key pieces that people should keep their eyes on, like color trends or...
For
like,
fall?
No,
for spring?
Well, let's start with fall, since fall's coming, and then let's talk about spring. What's in right now for fall?
Knits. I know, so weird. Oh, sweaters are big for winter.
Very original.
Here, newsflash, swimsuits for spring, summer. But sweaters, knits, strangely, is like a thing. Like a big, chunky, cozy knit really is sort of the big trend for fall. And I think, you know, I think we haven't seen that in a while. Everything's been so slick. Uh-huh. But I love that. And, of course, the oversized shearling. Like, it's just like that shearling is big. And then everything's being oversized. So it's like a big sweater with a big shearling and then something skinny on the bottom. So, like, proportion is a big thing, too. But that oversized men's look and the oversized outerwear is a really big thing. So, like, outerwear and knits, I think it's supposed to be a brutal winter, I guess. But, yeah.
What about the chunky shoe?
I don't know. Do you guys like a Birkenstock? It's still on the runway. It is still on the runway. I don't know. The Birkenstock Marc Jacobs just showed a Dr. Scholl's for spring. So I don't know, you guys. I don't know. This is San Fran. Do you like a Birkenstock?
Let's see a show of hands. Who likes the chunky shoe? Well.
All right. Bring on the pin heels.
There we go. And then what about for spring? Do you think there's a signature color coming or any trends that you, gingham, checks?
Well, gingham is huge. Okay. I did a whole thing on Yahoo Style about Dorothy from Wizard of Oz being the new style icon.
Oscar De La Renta showed some
checks. But they literally just lifted that look, the pinafore, the blue and white gingham check, which whoever thought would be a thing, but she's a thing. Gingham is huge.
Somebody could start a line and call it Surrender Dorothy.
They might have already.
They might have.
We'll have to search it after. But
anyway.
Gingham is big. And believe it or not, rave culture, which is just another thing in the spin cycle of fashion trends. It's like that's a big 90s thing, you know, and we have a whole rule in fashion being everything being coming around 20 years later. So here we are with 90s rave.
Somebody asked for your style icons. Do you have style icons?
My personal style icons?
Well, I think that's what they were asking for.
Oh, yeah.
Who are your style icons?
My personal style icons. This sounds so weird. Kurt Cobain and John Kennedy Jr. I love the idea of what they are. I think it's just because they're both so cool beyond. I'm like, it's an aspirational thing for me. I love John Kennedy Jr. because, you know, he could be the person that could walk down the street in a double-breasted suit and, like, a ski jacket. Or he could throw, like, a cashmere overcoat over sweatpants and a T-shirt. And he always looked really effortless in the way that those things contrasted together. And I love that. It was, like, a backpack with a suit and a bike on his way to work at the DA's office. Like, those things were awesome. And, like, that's how I think I am in my world anyways. Like, I love a casual with a dressy moment. I would like to think I'm a person who would just get up and put a suit on, but I probably wouldn't without a reason. But and then I just love Kurt Cobain because he just didn't look like he cared, and he was so cool about it. And I kind of like that.
What about any living people?
They're getting it all wrong. No, I'm just kidding. oh, gosh, living people. I mean, men?
It's your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, all those guys look good. Like, Matthew McConaughey looks great. Gosling looks great. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal looks great. I mean, these guys look great. I mean, I think they look great in a very pulled-together way. It's a totally different type of thing now that we live in. Everything is very much, I don't want to say a machine, but everything is very much filtered through a stylist POV today. So everything is always going to look great. I struggle to find poorly dressed people sometimes because on the red carpet because I think some look safe. Now, I mean, by point of comparison, you can always find someone, but I think it's more that they will look safe or they look boring, but no one ever looks atrocious. I mean, and, you know, like, I used to watch the Oscars when, like, Kim Basinger showed up in a gown she made herself. Who would do that today? With one sleeve, nobody would do that.
That was memorable, and not in a good way. So we should remind people that we're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Our speaker today is Joe Z, editor-in-chief of Yahoo Style, who is discussing the ins and outs of fashion and living and dead style icons. You can also find video on our club programs on the club's YouTube channel. So you were just saying that you struggle to find poorly dressed people on the red carpet, and I'm glad you qualified that, because if you came to Silicon Valley, you could find lots of poorly dressed people.
Oh! Thank you.
You find yourself in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is home to Silicon Valley, and to people who live in Silicon Valley, this is the center of the universe. You may think New York is, people who are in London think that's the center, but the people who live in Palo Alto feel it's the center of the universe. And but it may become the center of the tech fashion universe with lots of startups like Athos and Lumolift dedicated to gadgets and clothes that measure your heart rate, help you work out better, help you have better posture. And of course, Apple just unveiled its Apple Watch here last week. I don't really know if there's a right or wrong answer to this, but are you really excited about wearable tech? Because some of it just seems like it's gadgets and not super beautiful. On the other hand, you know, it could be something that really transforms the fashion industry.
I don't know. I always struggle with this. I'm like such a tech guy at heart. Like, I love toys. I love, like, I have every techie toy thing. I love that. Merging that with the world of fashion is like a hard thing for me. I mean, everybody's tried to tiptoe their way into the sort of the wearable tech trend, but it's never been really pretty and it's never really been practical, to be honest. I mean, I don't really need a windbreaker that has solar, this and that, because, like, what's the point? And I think
or
it's...
Or a sweater that plays a song if you touch one of the buttons on, yeah,
because
unzip it or something.
I have something that does that. It's called my phone. You know, and I think it's just an interesting dichotomy for me to understand. And I think, you know, fashion people are so much... The fashion world itself is such a bubble and such an inside type of community that doesn't really let a lot of people in. And I think wearable tech has been a tough place for people to find that perfect point of entry. I think Apple... with the Apple Watch, is trying really hard. I mean, you know, they invited all of these top international editors and they flew them into Cupertino, and I was invited and I couldn't go. It was during Fashion Week, but they wanted the fashion world to celebrate and embrace this watch in a big way. So they have to invite them into the conversation. And they got them there, and the fashion people were excited, but I think the Apple Watch will be a real test of whether this wearable tech thing really works, because, you know, Apple invented a watch already 7 years ago. It's called the iPhone. Like, that's what everybody uses to tell their phone, to tell the time. And I think fashion people don't need that particular thing anymore. So, like, what is it about wearable tech that's going to work? I mean, I always talk about, you know, this whole thing when, like, the whole eco-friendly clothes and all those things started to launch. It's like, you know what? Would you pay $80 more for a pair of jeans that was eco? No, no one did. Everybody just wanted what fit them. They just wanted what was right. So, like, with something that played a song with the sunlight and all those things, like, no, people just want what they want, because you buy clothes for a particular reason. And if you needed to listen to music, you would buy that something for that particular reason. And there's not a lot of reason that those two things need to merge. So until someone does it right, it's still a tough category.
Could you be brave and tell us which celebrities you think dress the best consistently?
Oh, God.
And are they doing this themselves, or they have people?
Everybody has a person. Whoever tells you they dress themselves, don't really. I mean, I think maybe like two does. I think Blake Lively says she dresses herself, and she really does. But, you know, most people have stylists. They have hair and makeup. They have all of those things. It's tough. You can't, you know, to be honest, I don't blame them, because I think once upon a time when I started and you were on the worst dress list and you went out and, like, the Kim Basinger thing, it's like, you know, you were in the newspaper and people said something and the next day it was in the recycling bin and no one ever talked about it again and those pictures don't exist. It's today, if you step out on the carpet and you look remotely not great, that most unflattering picture of you will be dug up every single year till the end of time in a recap of how bad you look. And that's a lot of pressure. I mean, I'm not that person, but could you imagine being that person where, like, that one, you know, mistake you, or one experiment you wanted to try turns into a running joke year after year? So that's why everyone tends to go really safe. I don't know, you know, I've styled Julia Roberts many, many times, but I thought she looked great this award season. You know, I thought she looked really just elegant. I knew exactly what she likes, and I love how she's, like, really doing all those things on the carpet. Well, Sarah Jessica always looks great, too.
What does Julia Roberts like?
She likes simple, tailored pieces. She looks great in a suit. You know, I don't think a lot of people can pull off a tuxedo on a carpet at all, and I think she always does it beautifully and elegantly.
What did you think of Robin Wright in the tuxedo, the backless tuxedo?
Oh,
did
I
you
like
see that?
That
you did?
Yeah, you didn't like it?
I really didn't like it.
Why?
I don't know. I thought it looked a little bit too hard.
Oh, I liked it.
You thought it looked sort of like racy? It was like from the front, it was a white tuxedo, and from the back, the whole back was cut out down to, like, her bum.
I just like that she was
open,
doing a little something, though.
Daring.
Different. Totally. And then I love people like Jennifer Lopez, too. I mean, she just, like, does her own thing. And, like, she goes out there and she makes a statement. And whether you like it or not, you definitely talk about it. And I think, you know, she achieves that purpose.
Who does not dress well? aside from Kim Basinger.
I can't go and have that conversation.
Why not?
I don't know. Who doesn't dress well?
Who can improve?
Who can improve?
Yeah.
No, you know who have I put on my worst dress list every single year to a point where, like, I don't think I could put her on the list anymore? It was like someone like Helena Bonham Carter. I mean, she shows up on a carpet. I almost think it's intentional at this point, because if you can't leave your house with the same shoe, that, I mean, for sure that's intentional, but just the fact that, like, it's starting to become such a cliche for me to always say that she was on our worst dress list. And so we couldn't even anymore. I had to sort of retire her to the honorary legendary Hall of Fame for a bad dress red carpet person.
Well, so we're talking about how celebrities look. When you do a fashion magazine shoot for Yahoo Style, how much photoshopping or retouching actually happens? I think a lot of people assume that there's a lot of that going on. And just so everybody knows, at the Chronicle, we're not allowed to Photoshop things. We can color correct very minimally, but we can't rub things out, make people skinnier, remove, you know, a mole or something like that.
Well, that's because you're a news organization. I think fashion magazines will be very excited to know. No, retouching exists everywhere. I mean, I think it's just escalated to a point where it's just like par for course. I mean, I think at magazines, every single thing, if you saw a picture the size of a stamp, it was retouched. Like every single thing did not go through a filter being retouched. And I think we want to put so much dirty laundry attached to retouching. I think it's really just a cleaning up. And I think we say that word and people assume that we've completely, you know, reshaped her body. And sometimes it's just to clean up the picture, or sometimes it's just to clean something up. So it's a tough call. I mean, you know, there are times when we've had to like darken something on a shirt just because we can have type, you know, overlay that can read better, like legibility issues. So, I mean, are we sitting around changing their ear shapes? And no, we're not doing any of that.
Tyra Banks famously on her show, when she had her talk show, showed herself as she really was and then showed herself photoshopped and claimed that a lot of what happens in fashion magazines like makes people...
Oh, it definitely happens in a lot of magazines. I think Kate Winslet was very public about that too. Like, she would be like, that's retouched to a point where it isn't me. We never did that. And we definitely don't.
At Elle or Yahoo?
At Elle. I mean, at Yahoo, we've done two covers right now. So, no, we put Emily out without retouching. I mean, it was just the thing where we didn't need it. These girls are, you know, she's like 20. Like, she's gorgeous. And it was a different thing. I mean, also, like, you know, we use so many pictures on Yahoo. We don't have the resources to retouch 50 pictures. But it's different. But, you know, certainly at Elle, we would never reshape someone's body to something that wasn't who they were. I mean, that's never happened in my watch, but I'm not saying that hasn't happened across the industry. For sure that's happened.
So you didn't want to be brave and call out some people who you thought should improve, but there was somebody on TV who recently passed away named Joan Rivers, mm-hmm. who was very bold about being very, you know, brassy and comical about these things. Somebody in the audience asks, who should take Joan Rivers' place on Fashion Police, and do you think they should continue with the show?
Wow. We just watched the tribute on Friday night. It was so touching. It was such a great thing. I love Joan. And she was the heart and soul of that show. You know, but they are going to continue. I think Melissa Rivers said it was going to continue. I mean, I'm not speaking for the network or for them. I mean, it's just what I watched on TV. But I think it'd be interesting to see where they take the direction of the show. I think, you know, Joan was such an anchor. You sort of need an anchor. I think we've discussed this with my boyfriend, and then we were like, Kathy Griffith is really sort of, to me, someone who would do a great job. You know, you need someone who's going to be ballsy and unfiltered and unedited in that way, where I think Kathy could do it. Certainly Chelsea Handler could have done it. But you need someone like that who's just going to go out there and like have a little bit of fun and poke at people a little bit and get you to think and provoke the idea of what this is about a little bit. But then, you know, still be able to laugh. Like, Joan did that every single week and is still so beloved by everyone. So I think you need that, because it can really skew mean really quickly. And I think that's when it stops being fun. And it's got to be fun.
I would like to pivot now away from celebrities to everyday people who do not have stylists to help them. And since you have a vast knowledge of fashion, styling, design, etc., what are some tips, like 3 or 5 tips, that you think would help everyday people look better?
Oh, gosh. Have a couple of really great investment pieces. I mean, I think like bags, like bag shoes and like a great piece of outerwear is something that can't really sometimes be too disposable. It just really needs to be the thing. And then you anchor it with really great basics. And that's sort of how I dress all the time too anyways, because I like inexpensive things mixed with more expensive things. And I think those things are important, because I think the high-low sort of brings out your individual, you know, personality, because that's really what clothes do. And then I think fit is really important. Like, to me, maybe that's more of a men's issue. There's a little bit of a women's
issue, too. It's also a women's issue, trust me.
And fit. And I think a lot of times women or men think something fit when it really doesn't. And I think having something fit you perfectly is going to make everything look so much better than when something doesn't fit. And I know it's a subtle thing, but you think, you know, where the shoulders hit, where the sleeve length is, where you just roll up the pants, like all those little details really contribute to you being much more stylish, much more polished. And that doesn't require anything extra. It just requires something looking, and you know when something fits, you know, and I think that's a really specific thing.
Some people don't know when things fit, because some people actually, believe it or not, think that they're larger than they are, and then they wear very large clothing to try to mask that.
And then it ends up making you look even larger.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the illusion dressing doesn't work. Just wear something that's fitted, that's your size, and trust me, it'll be the most flattering that you can be in.
What do you think about, so you're talking about a little bit about investment pieces, and then mixed with, you know, some high, or more expensive investment pieces mixed with some less expensive things. What do you think about fast fashion, and how do we define that for the everyday person? I mean, we all know Louis Vuitton and, you know, Hermes and things like that, but how do you define fast fashion?
Fast fashion, I think it's something where you can just turn a trend over quickly, and you can wear it quickly for that season. It's a little bit disposable. It's maybe on the cusp.
Your H&M, your Zara.
Yeah, because they're going to turn over something that's very runway trend driven of that particular moment, so you don't have to feel like you have to spend thousands of dollars on something that's really just going to have a couple months wear, that you can just have something and be in the trend of that moment and have it not be so precious. But at the same time, you know, I hate the term fast fashion, because I think for me it's really just about like mixing high-low. Like this season, I'm the style ambassador for Old Navy, and they have the most amazing things. And I was wearing their jeans, and I got their shirt, and like all that stuff. But that to me isn't fast fashion, because I'll wear that again and again and again until it falls apart. And I'll go back and get it again. And I think that's really what's great, because then you've got those great basic things to mix back into everything. So I don't know. I mean, that's why I think to me fast fashion is just something you want to buy. Like you want to buy that harem pant with a leather cuff at Zara because they just copied it off of X and Y runway. Then that to me is fast fashion, because that's not something that's going to carry you through the years.
A number of people have asked if you have any advice on gaining exposure in the fashion industry as an emerging designer.
Social media. I mean, I say this all the time. It's all those platforms are free. Here's your chance to put out exactly what you need to say. Facebook is the number. It's become such a thing. Like Facebook was like teetering and like. Everyone tells me that's the number one place for new content. You know, there's a place where you can actually develop a brand strategy and put out a vision and show what you need to show. Instagram, Twitter, like those places aren't just places for you to like say, hey, look what I did Saturday night with my friends. And like, hey, you want to meet on the corner for a drink? It's like, it's also a place to really show your business. And here's a chance that you can actually utilize all of those platforms as a free place to get your voice out there. So what is it that you do? Like, if you were a great designer and you were really focused in your POV, in your point of view for what you are, you could actually activate all those platforms in a way that works for your brand.
I wanted to see if we could do a quick lightning round of just super quick questions, like we're speed dating. And you give me like a one-word answer.
Okay.
Okay.
This is like inside the actor's studio.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, quick. Your favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite food?
Sushi.
Favorite place to vacation?
Hawaii.
What do you do on a day off?
Nothing.
Person you would most like to style?
Michelle Obama.
What would you do with her?
Oh, anything. I just want to meet her.
Okay. What did you wear in high school?
I wore women's jeans.
Women's jeans? What? There's got to be a story in that.
No, because I wanted to wear designer jeans, and everybody was wearing Jordache jeans, and they were just for women, so I wore them.
Okay. Favorite item of clothing in your closet?
My hoodie and my jeans.
Clothing you would never be caught dead in?
Jawed purse. Mandals. I think mandals probably tops that list.
Man sandals?
Yeah, man sandals. Okay. I can't even say it.
Something people would be surprised to know about you.
Oh, I'm a closet hip-hop dancer. I'm not laughing, but it's true. But
do you take classes?
I do.
In every city?
Every city I can, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I just got here last night.
You did?
I did.
To where?
City Dance Center.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Who knew? The Canadian hip-hopper. What are you wearing tonight?
Oh,
Do you have any Old Navy on?
Tonight, no. But I'm sorry. Hi-Lo. Look, my sweater is Saint Laurent, and then my shirt is Uniqlo.
Great. Wow. Okay, so there was an interesting fashion fair yesterday in San Francisco. It's called the Folsom Street Fair, where actually very little is worn.
Yes.
But what is worn typically is leather or latex or some kind of fetish wear. Did you, in your short visit here, happen to take in any of that?
Did I wear latex and leather yesterday?
No. Did you go?
I did go. Yes, I went. I was there with my boyfriend yesterday. We walked around. It was kind of amazing. I have to say, you know, I was there and I was taking pictures and I was all this stuff. And I was like, at first I was like, are we allowed to take pictures? Everybody was there like snapping away. I was like, okay, all right, I am too. I don't know. There was a girl being whipped and I felt bad for her. I went to help her, but they were like, no, she wants to be there. I was like, I don't think I'm meant for this fair, but I don't know. I was like, you guys, I feel bad for her. They're like, she wants to be there. Let's go. I'm like, okay, let's get a beer. I'm like, no, I'm sick. But I don't know. It was like, it was an interesting thing. I don't know anywhere else in the country that could exist. To me, it was like very classic San Francisco, or it was that sort of Tales in the City, you know, San Francisco that I have in my head.
God, how do we top that?
Well, I did wear the latex bodysuit.
Well, I'm not raising the mallet to hit Joe to make him stop talking, but I am asked to say that we're at the end, and I have something to say, and I can't find it. Here it is. Our thanks to Joe Z, editor-in-chief and executive creative officer of Yahoo Style. We also thank our audiences here and on radio, television, and the internet. Tonight's program has been underwritten by Levi Strauss & Company. I'm Carolyn Zinko, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you are in the know, is adjourned.